So that's cool. You're three episodes in.
Four.
Four? All right.
No, you might be right. It might be three.
All right.
Yeah.
But I'm so glad you like it.
No, you were right.
And I can't wait until you get deeper into into the last one.
Well, the payoffs, based on your reaction, the way you described it, the payoff sounded great. So
I really
cheers
don't
to your recommendation. No,
I really don't
want to
say any more.
Cheers to your recommendation, because we are very much enjoying it.
And we're talking about The Good Place.
The Good Place.
And it did get renewed, so there. I'm not sure when the next season is starting up, but it probably won't be too long from now, I don't think.
If it's on Netflix or Hulu or whatever, then probably not.
Well, no, it's an NBC show.
Oh, right. I'm new to Hulu.
Yeah.
I don't understand how this whole Hulu thing actually works. I just pay them money and I get shows.
So, yeah, Hulu's got a few of its own things, and then it's got, all the like network shows.
No, I'm kidding.
Yeah, okay.
The thing about Hulu, the reason we have Hulu, we probably don't need it, to be honest, although we're discovering... PSVU. PSVU gives us access to all the current stuff.
Okay.
And it works great on the Fire TV. But Hulu, we're discovering, not only gives you access to like full seasons of more recent shows, usually a season more recent than Netflix.
Mm-hmm.
But Hulu has like a shit ton of movies, like Disney movies and stuff that you don't get anywhere else for free.
Yeah.
So like for $12 a month without commercials, it kind of starts to become like better than buying a bunch of movies.
Yeah. And they've got their own stuff, too. They got some original stuff. Like every other service does at this point.
Well, that's where things are headed.
Oh, that's sorry, not I have to get my initial coughing fit out of the way. I've still got some sort of, it must be allergy related.
Can't still have a cold. That's nuts.
No.
Unless you got like a bronchial thing.
No, I don't think so.
You got a bronchial thing?
I got a bronchial thing.
Hey, yo.
It's in my trunk.
No. Get your bronchial
you wanna
thing
see
in
my
the
bronchial
trunk?
Thing?
Yo, why don't you pop the trunk and show me that bronchial thing? Hey, that's a fucking nice bronchial thing you got there. What do you think?
I think it's good. It's not, I mean, there's sweetness to it, but it's not like a cloying sort of sweetness.
I tried to balance it. So this is an actual drink. So I was standing in my kitchen looking for a drink. People are hanging out, and I'm like, I want a drink. And I was like, I feel like, because your wife had brought like 1,500 bottles of soda over.
Yeah.
I was like, hey, Mel, can you get a couple of mixers? And she comes over with like 20 bottles of soda. I'm like, well, all right.
All right. And one of them must have been a birch beer.
There was some birch beer. And I'm like, I feel like bourbon and birch beer should be a thing. Like, I just, you know, the mixologist in me feels like that should work. But I don't know exactly.
That sounds legit. I mean, it sounds, it's very, you know, like old-fashioned-y sort of territory.
Exactly. Exactly. And that's my thing. I kind of think this is old-fashioned-y, but more complicated. And so I found this recipe for an old Dutchman, not a flying Dutchman, an old Dutchman. And it is...
And not a Dutch oven man.
Definitely not a Dutch ovener.
All right.
A Dutch oven. So it's birch beer, bourbon, cinnamon stick, which I obviously omitted, maple syrup, a brandy cherry, which I also omitted. I did experiment with like grenadine. It just wasn't necessary. You get the color and everything from the birch beer anyway.
Yeah.
And also bitters.
Mm-hmm.
So you really are firmly in old-fashioned territory. To make this better, and also because I didn't have enough bourbon, I halved the bourbon out of necessity and then made up for it with cask-strength Redbreast, which I will tell
seems
you...
seems really wrong to do.
I'll tell you, it makes the drink a lot better. I mean, I'm really getting the... It's way smokier, which they say you want smoke and spice in this drink to counteract the birch beer.
Okay. I'd buy that.
So I don't think I get to rename because all I did was sub out of a tiny bit of booze, but I like it. It's very red.
It is very red. Very, 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 very red.
Oh, my God.
Oh, my God. What?
We are buddies in space. You
oh,
are.
We are.
We
I am.
You are you?
S. Michael Smith.
Okay.
And you, but you are.
I think I'm Michael Carassi.
All right. That bit was a little too much. We stretched that out. So we saw...
No.
No, we don't want to talk about that yet?
No, you have to talk about Alien Covenant.
Oh, all right. I don't want to talk about it too much.
You bitched about it at the end of the last podcast.
Yeah,
you have to talk about it
right
off the bat.
Fresh in my mind back then. So we saw Alien Covenant.
We as in you and your wife, not Erica and I.
It was the wife's... The wife was the one pushing to see it. I was like, all right, fine.
Is she an Alien fan?
She kind of is. I don't know how... I can't... We haven't really talked about this, and I'm kind of afraid to, but I want to believe that she liked the first two and didn't really care much about the
third and fourth.
The third, fourth, or whatever crap that was after the first two.
Well, there's the quadrilogy, as they market it. And then there was Alien versus Predator.
Yeah.
And now then she, Prometheus.
I know she would have no problems watching AVPs. And I think she kind of gets a kick out of those.
Are there more than one movie?
They're stupid. And yeah, there are two AVPs.
I don't think I saw this.
They're dumb and kind of fun to watch.
Well, the first one had Lance Henriksen. It's like, oh, yeah. That's where Bishop came
from.
He's going to
get killed by one again.
Yay. But at least you're like, all right, okay, it ties in somehow.
Yeah. Yeah. So we saw Prometheus, and I didn't think much of it.
Mm.
Most
no
people
one
didn't.
Didn't think much of it.
It was there's a lot of stupid in it. A lot of the characters are making like the most ridiculous decisions
or jumping to conclusions without really much of any evidence.
I mean, like even for a horror movie,
yeah, which is like, the hallmark
this is,
of stupidity.
This is dumb.
Yeah.
This is really dumb. lots of stuff like that. There is a less of that in Covenant. There was some. There were certainly some really dumb decisions made, but not to the extent that there were in Prometheus. It was much more of a like straight up horror sort of film,
existing loosely in the Alien mythos.
Yeah, and it really that when you talk about the mythos and mythology. Prometheus raised a lot of questions about stuff.
Poorly, but yes.
Yeah, poorly, but yes. Like, oh, these are engineers. Here's grainy footage of what happened to them. And, oh, it's a mystery. And we're not sure what's going on here.
Where'd the ship come from? Why does it have the cargo it has? What?
Yeah. Pretty much none of that got dealt with in Covenant. So if you're looking for... What are the answers to these all these questions?
Which is all I would care about.
Yeah, in Prometheus, this is not the movie that is going to satisfy your curiosity.
Guess I'll wait for the third one.
Yeah, but it was still a better movie than Prometheus.
Again, as I said before.
It was much more akin, in my mind, to the original Alien movie.
Okay, well that's not a bad thing.
But
the bar was so low from Prometheus that it could be still a pretty lame movie and be better than Prometheus.
Yes, it was more like the original movie with
like claustrophobic,
with like a billion times more Fassbender. they Fassbendered the hell out of this one.
they really slipped him the old Fassbender?
Yes.
But they double Fassbender.
They double Fassbendered it.
Yeah. See, that's not everyone's up for the double Fassbender. You got to find the right movie that's willing to do the double Fass.
So yeah, Fassbender played two different. Roles in the movie.
And one, as you pointed out, fulfilled his Assassin's Creed obligation to wear a hood.
I think at least one of them had him wearing the hood, which it was so much like the Assassin's Creed hood.
Did he just leap off of tall objects for no reason?
Not really.
Damn it.
No. There was leaping and there were certainly objects that were high up, but
Nary the
he didn't really perch,
See, yeah, you got to be a percher. Assassins perch. There's one thing I've learned from the movie and games is that assassins perch like motherfuckers. They're like, see that spot? Excuse me, I need to go fucking perch right there. Okay, I'm perched. Now I might jump and inexplicably be okay or stab you. It's sort of a 50-50 thing. I might even do both.
But, I think Fassbender did a good job. The cast, for the most part, was good.
The curly haired dude who does all the comedy stuff is in it, right?
The comedy stuff.
Yeah, he Kenny Powers and
maybe.
Did you see?
I don't.
Tropic
there was
Thunder.
Very...
You saw Tropic Thunder.
Yeah.
Yeah. Remember the explosions guy, the pyrotechnics guy.
Oh God, I don't remember who he was in.
Hold on, let me just find a picture of Kenny Powers.
All right. Do 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 do
do do do do do.
So there was some humor.
That
in...
actor.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, he's in it. I'm sure he's like the comic relief of the movie.
No.
No?
Not
wow,
really, no.
That's funny.
He like maybe had a couple of lines, but he made some really bad decisions.
Well, that's his hallmark. He's just a stupid character in everything he does.
Yeah. But yeah, if you're just looking for like a straight up alien scare movie, go for it.
Like jump scare?
Yeah, there's that. There's right. Also, you know, a lot of tense moments, a lot of like
okay.
A lot of Fassbender thriller sort of psychological scary stuff. I don't know where I'm going with that. But Fassbender can be a creepy fucking dude when he wants to.
Yeah.
Like, really creepy.
There were some times when, like, even when he was doing Magneto, I'm like, I feel like he might kill children. There's just something about him that I think, child killer.
Oh, yeah.
Is it? Can we call it thrill-bending?
Yeah. What?
Fast thriller? thrill-bending. I don't know. Thrill-bender!
I think I went on that at an amusement park one time. And we'll have to have this in the next podcast. We have a very exciting thing coming up next weekend, or this weekend, right? And going to an amusement park?
Oh, right, okay.
Okay. Well, you're looking at your watch.
I wonder if I could look at my calendar.
Where's he going with this?
Can I look at my calendar and him not realize it?
No, but we're going to go to Seabreeze.
Yes.
The four of us and Simon.
That's
and
right.
This is going to be his first amusement park experience.
Yeah,
and
we're not counting Disney.
Terrifying.
We're not counting Disney because the Animal Kingdom is not ride based.
Yeah,
except for the safari. I think he'll be okay. We just need to avoid spinny rides.
You know, I hear that.
you and Simon, except for the slight height difference because he's a fucking tall kid. You guys are gonna be kind of gravitating to the same things, which All would right. not be the Gravitron. Ironically,
do you think he'll like bumper cars? Or
that, he like be he's been on much. Them before.
He has?
Yeah.
Oh. Did he like them?
Oh, he loved them.
All right.
But they wouldn't, I don't, they were at a, like a bowling alley party that had a lot of cool shit.
He might be too small.
Yeah, I don't think they'll let him ride because he had a ride with me.
Right.
And they don't let you do that in bumper cars at the,
yeah.
Because those are like legit bumper cars usually. Mm-hmm. Although bumper cars used to be like free for all, you know, lots of neck injuries. Now they like kind of make you go in a circle and stuff.
Yeah, bumper car. I don't know. It's been a while since I've been on bumper
them. Cars. They nerfed them quite a bit. Probably wisely. Now, you were probably going to bring up the Steam movie.
Yes.
But don't forget, we did also see Guardians of the Galaxy 2 since we
did. Okay. So, you want to talk about that first?
Yeah.
Yeah, let's save this
the steaming
pile for...
Let's save the steamy conversation of steamness.
Oh, my God. It was quite an experience, though.
It was so much smoke and steam.
So, yeah, we finally saw Guardians of the Galaxy 2. I thought it was a good movie. I thought it was fun. It was long.
Yep.
The
Very
plot was
plotty.
Stupid.
Yep.
But, I mean, to be expected, the plot was stupid in the first one, and I still loved it.
I still think the plot was better in the first one.
But it was still stupid. I mean...
I give a slight pass when it's, like, tied to a larger, you know, mythology and narrative. So it, like, was tying to other things,
and I enjoyed
that. The
first one was tied into the Infinity Gauntlet.
Yeah.
And...
this was, like, completely them doing their own thing, which...
Yeah.
To their credit, they took...
Well, sort of. But the whole thing about the...
Nebula and...
No, his dad.
Yeah, it wasn't really... I mean, it was about the Guardians, I'm saying. It wasn't about the larger Marvel universe.
Okay. Well, sort of.
No, well, for the most part. Well, a lot more than the first one. You can argue with me there. The first one was all about integrating into the Marvel universe.
Sure.
But this, what it allowed them to do was, they didn't have to worry about Infinity Stones and shit. They were able to be like, oh, okay, we're going to ratchet the humor up to like 11.
Yeah, yes. They ratcheted up the humor. They did it, though, by like ratcheting up the cheesiness of the movie.
Yeah, there was a camp to it.
The story, there's a lot more campiness to this.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that was, I thought that was all right, but I thought that was that made it come across as a little bit weaker than the first one.
I definitely do not think it's as good as the first one.
Because there was much more of an earnestness to everything in the first one.
Well, yeah.
It's like, this is dumb, but we are in 110%.
It was the strange, like the first one had the strange bedfellows out of necessity thing going for it that I think helped.
Mm-hmm.
And the second one, like they really focus on the relationships, to go back to the last podcast.
They did, but they didn't, there were so many times where they just sort of like, they focused on it, but only for like the briefest amount of time.
Well, they focused on it long enough to milk it for humor and then moved on.
Yeah.
You know? I don't know. Guardians of the Galaxy 1 is such a good movie that this being not quite as good is really not a knock against it. It's still a very enjoyable movie.
Yeah. The bigger scenes, the more action-y scenes, They were okay. The smaller scenes that were just like two characters having time together, I thought those were by far the best parts of this. You're thinking about that.
I don't know if I agree.
I thought the little scenes were, you know, two characters would have time and they would talk about stuff.
So basically, the whenever the movie slowed down,
yeah,
and breathed.
Yeah.
So, okay, I'll give you that. But I think that's true for most movies nowadays.
Well,
because they do so rarely. Like, I think one of the things that Guardians of the Galaxy does very well is they handle like big battle scenes well, because instead of just being about explosions, they inject a lot of humor and like background elements. Like the opening was a really funny scene because there is a huge battle going on, but you're not focused on it at all.
Right. And that was, that's kind of the heart of the matter. Because, yeah, it's a big battle. You've seen big battle scenes. Mm-hmm. You've seen stuff like this. But here we are watching Groot dance around.
Right.
And that's far more interesting than what's going on in the background.
Yeah, that's to James Gunn's credit. He's like, well, we set up this giant fight, and we're going to watch a baby tree dance.
Yeah.
And, like, really funnily, too.
And it works. I mean, that was one of the
but that's what I'm saying is, more so than other movies, I think the Guardians has, because of the dynamic, it handles big fight scenes better than other movies do. Because there's still more banter.
But, yeah, and then
talking about the tape?
Yeah, the whole bit about the tape, that was
even
great.
Even though it was basically ruined by the trailer, like, that scene's still really funny.
Yes.
Drax doesn't have any tape! Well, go ahead, did you have...
And I liked all the quiet scenes. Like the scenes with Mantis and Drax, I thought they played really, really well together.
Mantis bugged me.
Oh,
she felt
there.
Too,
you did it. You did it.
She felt too stereotypical.
You didn't even see what you did there, did you?
I'm ignoring it because she did bug me, and her name is Mantis. But yeah, she just, I don't know, she bothered me.
She's not the Mantis from the comics. Really at all.
I don't care about that. Like, they've tweaked a lot of the characters.
Some people care about that.
Well, yeah, the fanboys. But I've only read the one reboot that you gave me to read of Guardians.
Mm-hmm.
Ironically, that one stinger with the Ravagers, like, that was a lot of the original Guardians from the old comic, apparently.
Okay.
Which I thought was interesting. So that was kind of what that was doing.
Yeah.
But yeah, Mantis, I don't know, I keep coming back to she felt stereotypical.
Yeah.
I really thought that they could have, I mean, maybe in the next movie, I assume she'll stick around, they'll explore it more.
Well, yeah. Well,
but her, like, childlike innocence was like, okay, there are other ways to play this than, like, really stereotyping this character.
Okay, I'll give you that.
That was the one thing that bugged me. I still enjoyed, you know, her, and she fit okay.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and her and Drax were a funny pairing.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
Yeah, but that's more the comedy of opposites.
Well, fine.
Well, like, I mean, look at, like, I really enjoyed the stuff with Rocket.
Mm-hmm.
Like, how he was trying to work through his issues in, like, the worst way possible.
Yeah.
And, like, having these self-realizations after doing really shitty things. Like, I thought that was nice.
Yeah, I did. I wanted to see more of that, honestly. I could have seen a lot more of that.
So I'm not disagreeing with the...
And the thing about his Kree... stepfather, or however you want to call it, a kind of adopted
Rocket?
No.
Star-Lord?
Yeah.
I'm talking about Rocket.
I know.
Okay.
But the Rocket and, oh my gosh, what's his name?
Star-Lord?
No.
Ego?
Is it?
Oh, yeah, yo ho ho and a bottle of rum.
the Kree guy.
Yeah, yo something.
Sure.
I can't fucking remember his name.
Star-Lord, the guy who raised
The Ravager who raised him.
Yes.
It'd be a very trashy novel. The Ravager who raised
abusive
him.
Manner.
Yes.
But yeah, I thought his character had a lot of really...
Yondu.
Yes.
So I would not YOLO anything.
Yondu and his YOLO moments.
Michael Rooker doesn't have necessarily the widest range. I mean, his character in Walking Dead, his character in Slither, also a James Gunn movie, and his character in this are all pretty similar.
Mm.
But I've always enjoyed Michael Rooker. And so, like, Yondu, I really like the Yondu thing. Cause
I like what they did.
He's like a grizzly bear, but you know he's got a heart of gold deep down.
Kind of.
Well, as much as he can.
It's like maybe a little bit of gold in there.
It's largely tarnished and turned to coal, but there's a little bit of gold. A little bit of gold left.
But yeah, I thought his character had a nice arc. I certainly like the moments where the characters were dealing with their own internal stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that was more interesting than like the scene where he's just murdering everybody on the ship.
I think we all agreed that broke.
It just went on for a long time.
Well, it was too much. Like you know exactly what it was, right? We're all educated enough at this point to be like, oh, they had a scene like that in the first movie.
Yeah.
So what do? You one-up that scene.
Mm-hmm.
By doing it to an exponential increase. It was utterly unnecessary. It was too long. And it makes him way too fucking powerful. If you can just kill like 100 dudes from the safety of a room, it's just too much. You know? Yeah. You got to scale that shit down. So I know. And Erica had a big problem with it too. I really did not enjoy that scene.
Yeah. One of the characters I didn't expect to find so interesting. But
the first mate?
Yeah, his first mate.
The James Gunn's brother.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, yeah, and that actor is always funny. Like whenever he pops up and stuff, he's in like funny.
He was kind of funny, but he was just so like.
But he's a good actor. Yeah, he's like, no, he's totally this guy. Like when he's like, "They killed my friends. I didn't mean to mutiny." Like,
I know.
I believe you. Like you're not the. In my mind, I kind of equated him with Happy Days. The guy who became a director who directs a bunch of stuff now. Ron Howard. You know his brother.
Mm-hmm.
So he's kind of the goofy actor who just stick in as a joke.
Yeah.
I've always equated them together because that's like another director's brother. But he's like a legitimate actor.
Yeah.
Steve Gunn or something. Yeah, I didn't expect him to be, A, as in the movie, as much in the movie as he was, and B, like, mm-hmm. as sympathetic and likable.
Mm-hmm.
So.
So, I think we agree. Good movie. Definitely recommend anybody who hasn't seen it.
Like. The first one, if you like Marvel movies, if you like sci-fi with humor, any of those things, go see this.
Yeah. While it's might still not like it as much as the first one, but still good.
Yeah.
Still a step above. All right, are we getting there now?
Smike, I'd say that this conversation is flatlined.
How did this even
come up?
It obviously it came up because the trailer for the new Flatliners movie, the remake, came out just like within the last week,
and we hadn't seen it. You saw it.
I saw it. I was like, they're remaking this, really? Okay. I don't recall Flatliners being any kind of like a major box office success or anything, or even like a cult classic.
No, I don't think it's a cult classic. I don't think it hit that either.
So it was just sort of an odd choice to remake what I would say as a slightly above average Joel Schumacher film.
Which is really not saying a lot.
It's not.
I mean, once you throw Batman Forever into the mix, it's really not saying a lot.
Maybe I should even, you know, reframe that as a surprisingly not terrible Joel Schumacher film.
Which doesn't make it a great movie.
No.
It's just surprisingly not terrible for Joel Schumacher.
Yeah, and he's had some really good movies. I really liked Falling Down.
That's funny. Erica keeps saying that, too. So she holds up. Erica holds up Falling Down and Lost Boys.
Yeah.
And I would absolutely. Boys is still one of my favorite movies. And I really enjoyed Falling Down when I saw it, but I saw it once when it first came out on VHS.
Mm-hmm.
So I need to watch it again to, like, say that is a great movie. You know, definitively. Because I've long since realized that my memories of movies and my taste in movies was shit.
Yeah.
For decades. So when I go back to movies excitedly with Erica and she hates them, I'm like, this is not as good as I remember.
Well, I also remember Falling Down being very good. I think I've seen it a couple of times. Okay. I this probably been at least 10 years since I've seen it, though.
But you had a fully formed critical mind at that point. I was like, I think still in my teens when I saw Falling Down.
And I'll still watch Lost Boys whenever that comes on.
Dude, that movie's the shit. Come on. It's got one of the best old man lines in the history of movies. One thing I ever liked about living in Santa Ana. Oh, the damn vampires.
Yep.
And, you know, Kiefer Sutherland.
Yeah. Okay, so we were like, hey, let's watch the... Well, I probably am the one who instigated,
you did.
Instigated this. It's like, hey, we should watch the original Flatliners. Because I remember seeing it in the theaters. And I remember not hating it. I don't remember like, wow, this is awesome. But I remember like, okay, this is an all right movie.
And Erica had never seen it.
And yeah, and you've seen it, and Mel had seen it. So Erica's the only one who hasn't seen it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that the three of us who had kind of agreed. It's like, yeah, it wasn't, I don't remember it being bad.
Watch it again, yeah. I remember it being mildly creepy, but I was young.
Yeah.
I wouldn't describe it as mildly creepy anymore.
No. So we got, I think, on Hulu.
Yeah, because Hulu is sort of one of those...
freely available on Hulu.
Just sort of rescues you when you need a random fucking movie. I mean, I think Hulu had Real Genius, too, when we needed it. When Eric and I watched it. Yeah.
That was a good movie.
That holds up incredibly well. Val Kilmer is still
awesome. Val Kilmer at his best.
It really was him at his best.
Yeah, which is kind of sad.
I know. It's a great role. Anyway, so Flatliners. So if you're not familiar with the movie... The plot is it's a bunch of kind of gifted or some gifted medical students at this sort of weird Baroque art gallery medical school
that
doesn't in any way apply to any HIPAA standard that I can think of.
No.
There's no way it could be clean or sterilized because all the rooms are like museum gallery rooms.
Yes.
Which made no sense.
Right.
No sense.
Not really, no.
No. I mean, it's Schumacher trying to be like gothic.
Yes.
And so Kiefer Sutherland kind of spearheads this initiative with this group to flatline. So they want to experience what happens after
and
you
just
die.
Let me just stop for a second and say,
sure,
this has a really good cast.
Mm-hmm.
A very strong cast. Kiefer Sutherland, Julia Roberts,
Kevin Bacon,
Oliver Platt.
And then one of the violins. You know, but you know what? Here's the thing. So I will say this right off the bat. Eric and I agree on this. You could take Oliver Platt out of that movie.
Yeah.
And not a single thing changes.
Yeah.
He didn't add much humor.
He really didn't.
He had no point.
I think he was wasted. I mean, we agree he's a talented, very funny guy.
Oh, very funny. Utterly wasted in that movie.
Yes.
But, like, they gave it back like a...
He was there to just, like, mumble commentary.
He wasn't even, like, an audience stand-in.
No.
He was just Oliver Platt hanging out with some weirdos.
Yeah.
and trying to be the voice of reason but being ignored.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was just weird. It was a weird misuse. So right off the bat, it gets a negative one for misuse of Oliver Platt.
But at the same time, an odd plus one for using William Baldwin really well.
Are we sure it's William?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Sure which Baldwin it was.
Well, I know it's not Alec, but like, I mean, at that point, Stephen and William really could be interchangeable. I mean, it was decades ago.
Okay, I'll kind of give you that. But yeah,
it's the Baldwin with the hair. It's the Baldwin with the hair.
With the good hair.
With the good hair.
With the good hair.
Schumacher was all about hair in this movie. So there's a couple things Schumacher was about in this movie. Creepy faces in the background.
Yes.
Hair.
Mm-hmm.
And steam.
Oh my God.
Everywhere.
Every scene has steam.
If we actually smoke or both.
Or both.
If we lived in the world.
Flashing lights.
Well, there is often at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
And playing off of the steam.
Yes.
But if we, I was thinking about this, if we lived in the world that Schumacher envisioned this movie, we would be moist all the time. We'd have like fucking pruned skin from all the steam everywhere.
Right. And I'll say this right now. If anybody out there is like, hey, I want to watch Flatliners again and maybe make it a drinking game where you and drink whenever you see. I'm just putting this out. If you're like, if you think this and think it might be fun to drink whenever there's a scene with steam,
no.
You will die.
You will die before the movie ends. You will die of alcohol poisoning in the worst way. In fact, if you were to drink water every time you saw steam, you would die of water poisoning, which is a real thing.
And you might think these guys are exaggerating. No.
Fuck you, we're not. I mean, it became the game for us, for the four of us.
Because
Mel got an order early on. She's like, I didn't know we were Mystery Science Theatering this. And then we were all doing it by the end. But
yeah.
Like, we were looking around and they were,
so they're like walking through like a city, like a sidewalk, and every 3 feet there's steam coming out of something.
And like, and I said,
they're like, okay, I get that.
I lived in New York City. Yes, there's random steam in cities.
But when they went out into like the suburbs and went to someone's house.
They were
house,
like the woods.
Yeah.
And there was smoke coming out of
and
the
ground.
And
then like multiple places in this person's yard are smoking.
And we're like, shouldn't Kevin Bacon tell her that her house is on fire? Because smoke isn't supposed to come out of the ground in the suburbs. I don't, I don't think it was coming out of like a leaf pile
too. Yeah, like multiple, more than one yeah. place.
And there was mist.
And mist.
There was mist and smoke in that area.
And she had a greenhouse where there was mist and water.
Yeah, it was. Oh my god!
So it was that.
All their apartments, right outside the window, in all of their apartments, there was steam. Did you notice that?
Yeah.
Especially Kiefer Sutherland's apartment, but.
And what was with his, how did he get like this like mansion upscale?
What about William Baldwin? He had a fucking 2-story open loft.
Yeah.
What was that about? Like, this is like the Friends thing. It's like, oh, we want to give these characters interesting places to live. No one can afford that. It's what? Were they all trust fund kids and we just didn't know that?
I think some of them were. I think
William Baldwin and Kiefer Sutherland might have been.
Probably. I think Oliver Platt lived in kind of a crap hole.
Yeah, but he had a glass wall. Which actually was not a good selling point, because you can't control the light coming into your apartment.
And let's talk about Kevin Bacon's character.
So right off the bat, I will say that Erica suggested this, and I agree. I think it was his drug phase.
Kevin Bacon?
Kevin Bacon has admitted to being on drugs for a certain portion of his life.
Okay, that would explain
a lot. So...
So the opening to this movie is one of those like emergency room scenes where somebody's
camera whips around, follows like gurneys and people on hospital beds. Everyone's shouting,
and Kevin Bacon comes in and he's like running around like it's a war zone.
Kevin Bacon was moving like it was in double speed.
Yes.
Like, he was moving at a different tempo than the camera was going.
Yeah.
And anyone else was going. And the whole rest of the movie, I thought he was going to start dancing.
Yeah. Because every time he did anything.
He'd, like, spin into every, like, line. Like do a pirouette.
And, he would just, like, come in and, like, take his jacket off. And be, like, twirling around and throwing on the ground.
He had the cocaine sweats at every scene. And his hair. His hair was legendary. But remember, he just like climbs out of the window.
There's a scene where he's leaving his campus apartment or whatever the hell it is. He's climbing out. He's rappelling out the window because fuck you. That's how Kevin Bacon leaves his room.
And I think, and then I love the shot after that because I was cracking up. It's him talking to Kiefer Sutherland, and it's like a upper body shot of the two of them talking. It's a talking head shot, and he's supposed to be taking off his rappelling gear, I assume. But it just looked like he was masturbating. He's talking to Kiefer Sutherland. It's like one hand is just clearly moving and rocking his whole body. And like, I'm just trying to imagine Kiefer Sutherland like not trying to acknowledge that, like, he's about to get jizzed on.
Yeah. Kiefer Sutherland did his own share of overacting, I think, in this.
He did his over Kiefering.
Yeah.
Because Kiefer Sutherland kind of comes with a certain degree
of overacting. But for all of this, I mean, I have to put it on Schumacher.
Oh, yeah.
All on Schumacher.
Absolutely. Utterly and completely Schumacher.
Yeah.
It was his aesthetic through and through.
Some of the other stuff, the lighting. Almost every scene had lighting that was moving around. You know, like lights sweeping through a window, through a room.
It's like he wanted moving silhouettes constantly to try to make it creepy. But it just
distracted. There was one scene that I think Schumacher must have like jizzed his pants on, where Kiefer was running down a dark hallway, jumped up, hit a hanging light fixture, making it bounce around, and then just kept running. And I was like, oh, this must have been Schumacher's favorite part of the whole
movie.
I
bet you anything they had to cut out the audio where it was like, that's for you, dude!
This is all for you, Joel!
And then Joel's like, yes!
billowing? There was so much billowing in this.
Yeah, there was an inordinate amount of wind.
Sheets billowing everywhere.
The entire city of Chicago, which we had to look it up, is where this was filmed. The entire city of Chicago is draped with Silent Hill-esque billowing plastic sheeting in this movie.
Yes.
Like, there are no doors anywhere. There are no windows anywhere. Everything is plastic sheeting.
Yeah.
Everything is dilapidated or being renovated, or kind of both.
Yes. Oh, man. And not super scary. I mean, there were some kind of scary bits, but it gets kind of explained, I want to say early on. But you know what? Take a step back. This movie takes way too fucking long to get where it's going.
Yeah, you were saying that early on, and I agree.
And there are four characters who have their own sub stories of things that they have to deal with.
Spoiler: Oliver Platt's not one of them. Because he has no point in this movie.
Right. And I think that was too much.
And to their credit, they were like trying to give each of those subplots time to develop.
Yeah.
But it's like at least one subplot too many.
Right. Right.
You know, and one of them resolved just sort of on its own.
Yeah.
Like William Baldwin's just sort of tied up neatly. And like, we're not going to acknowledge that it's done. It's just, all right. And now he's just going to yell. Oh, what was that really funny? Who cares about Billy Walsh or whatever? And he got like really upset. Erica loved that line. It was funny.
Yeah, they could have taken out his. Because it was never even really scary at all.
No. Nope.
His was the least creepy. Julia Roberts, I thought had the more interesting one.
It was interesting because there was a subtext to what was supposed to be scary.
Yeah.
The red light thing got really annoying.
Yeah.
And I was reading the trivia and it's like, Schumacher was very clear about like, this color light means something okay is going to happen. This color means something bad's going to happen. It's like, all right, dude, like this is worse than The Sixth Sense with the color red. Like, okay. Oh, giant red spotlight's on. Her dad's going to show up.
And I thought it would have been a nice progression from Kevin Bacon's sub story, which was kind of scary but not really, to her sub story, which was
whoa.
Creepier.
Kevin Bacon only had one incident.
I know.
It wasn't even scary.
That would have been enough though. I mean that was enough though. That was that taste. It was like here's something that's like it was a kind of a scary moment for him. I mean, he wasn't hurt or anything.
No, I mean,
but it was like this is fucking with me.
Yeah, and he had some dance moves to go with it.
And yeah, to Julia Roberts' moments, which were far more creepy.
Yes. Yeah.
To Kiefer Sutherland's moments, which were should have been the scariest. It should have been that ramping up. Baldwin's substance just toss that up. Fuck that.
Well, no. So okay. So you really want to get intellectual about it? I think, and I'm not going to give Schumacher credit for this, but what you could look at is the four subplots with their creepy experiences were like the four elements of horror. So you had the erotic element with Baldwin.
All right.
And then you had I don't know what Kevin Bacon's was because there wasn't much to it.
Yeah.
But you had the visceral horror, like the gore horror with Kiefer Sutherland. And then you had like the more standard, like suspense, creepy, less is more horror with Julia Roberts. So it's like, and it didn't, the problem is that when you do that, it like becomes very didactic.
Yeah.
It doesn't have a cohesive element because each of their things was so different and explored. But
the three, and the other argument I make for having the three be Kevin Bacon, Roberts, and Sutherland is that the different levels of depth of how they felt about those things.
Yeah.
Because Kevin Bacon was like, I feel pretty bad about this.
Yeah. He's like, oh, I know what I gotta do.
Yeah.
All right, got it.
Julie Roberts is like, I feel really awful about this.
This has sort of been fucking me up.
Kiefer Sutherland's like, I hate myself for this. And that makes such a nice progression in my mind. And it would have shaved off a lot of...
I agree William Baldwin's story could have gone. I absolutely agree. I'm just saying that, like, I think I understand on some artistic level.
Okay. I'm arguing that my artistic levels that would have I just described would have made
movie.
A stronger
I
movie.
I will not argue against that. It was me, for the one time in my life, sticking up for Joel Schumacher. But not really, because I don't think he was that smart.
But... I would recommend anybody who hasn't seen it, go see it, because it was fun. We had a good time watching it.
It was, you know, what was interesting was it really felt ahead of its time in terms of it being a movie from 1990.
Yeah.
It really felt like some of the more dark, grungy, gothic kind of stuff that came more in the mid-90s.
I hate to say this, but I think it did influence a lot of films after
I think it did. I mean, I felt there was a lot of Dark City.
Yeah.
I felt a lot of Dark City in that, which also I keep for Sutherland, in a much better character.
Much more interesting.
Yeah. But yeah, all the way up through, like, The Matrix. But, I mean, that ultimately comes down to cyberpunk. And this was not steampunk, even.
So, while it's not a great movie, it's not a cult classic.
For a reason.
It's not terrible.
No. Would you take this over Alien Covenant?
Yeah, I would. If you said you have to watch one of these two movies again,
right.
I would go with Flatliners every time.
Every time. It's got 100% less Michael Fassbender's in Assassin's Hoods.
Yeah, even though it's too long, it takes too long to get to where you want to go.
Mm-hmm.
We were watching and we were entertained for the whole thing.
Yeah. It's easy to make fun of.
It really is.
I would watch it again, and you know what I think a safer drinking game would be? Because you could find so many drinking games with this movie. Mm-hmm. I think every time it looks, anyone can make a sound argument that it looks like Kevin Bacon's about to dance. I think that is a good drinking game. Because you're going to get a good 12 to 15 shots out of that, but steam would kill you. Because there's
How about
steam.
Every time they ignore Oliver Platt?
Okay, that's another good drinking. Every time they're in an apartment that they couldn't possibly afford, there's a drinking game there too.
Yeah, and there was like the whole weird romance between Kevin Bacon and Julia Roberts. It just like made no sense.
They didn't have any chemistry whatsoever. But if Kevin Bacon was coked out of his mind the whole time, who would? Kevin, I'm over here. Can you stop looking at a tree? Oh. Seriously, everyone's hair was ridiculous. Everyone's hair was blown out in that movie. It had 80s hair. It was
it
very
did.
80s hair.
There was a
hair.
Lot
yeah.
of 80s hair in that.
Because that's what, like, I forget sometimes that 1990 is still more the 80s than the 90s.
Yeah.
You know? So you get a lot of the 80s sensibility. That opening shot with Kiefer Sutherland on the, like, the pier in the wind and the trench coat, the little sunglasses. It's a good day to die. Which, they prominently featured that line in the trailer for the new one, I noticed.
Yes. So, just to follow this up with talking about the trailer.
So we watched the trailer collectively after it.
It looks like, you know, the same basic story. I don't see that there's a lot of... I think they did pare it down to just maybe four characters.
No, there's way more characters.
Are there more?
Yeah.
Okay.
At the end when they shoot through all the different people who flatline, it's way more people.
Is it?
Yeah, it was like six or seven.
Oh, okay.
With their weird...
That sounds like a bad choice. But yeah. I don't know.
Basically, they combined the OA with Flatliners.
Oh, yeah, yeah. That was the other thing, that people are somehow have abilities when they come back from this. Things they couldn't do. So, yeah, definitely a lot of OA
influence there.
Stuff there.
But you know what? Like, after a certain point, the trailer just started to feel like a generic horror movie to me.
Yeah, and a lot more CGI. Because if there's anything Flatliners, the original, needed, it was more CGI.
Or better practical effects. Or less steam. Maybe CGI steam. Joel, we have the technology. We have an algorithm. It's the best looking steam you'll ever see. No, I need real steam in every scene. That's my Joel Schumacher impression.
Honestly, if you had to choose between... a sort of kind of the mediocre sort of CGI that we saw in that trailer versus Schumacher's very old fashioned big lighting changes. Which would you rather have? And the lighting changes were pretty cheesy and they were definitely, you know, telegraphing, oh, something bad about to happen.
Yeah, but there's something from my theater days that, like, I'm more okay with the lighting.
I am too. Like, but I have the same
kind
of background. Mediocre
CGI is really, like, just annoys the shit out of me. Because the lighting, so here's the thing. We've been trained as audience members, much less performers, to accept that the lighting is deliberate and is meant to tell you something.
Yes.
Bad CGI cannot do that. So what it does is it pulls me out because I start to look at it like subjectively, like, this is shitty CGI. Why did they choose?
So even though the light change is
ham-fisted,
less realistic,
but that's to its credit. So here's the thing.
It's more of a stylized thing.
A very stylized choice is better than a poor CGI choice.
That's trying to look realistic.
Ham-fisted stylism is better than failed artistic attempts, if you want to really kind of generalize.
Sure.
Like, Jurassic Park CGI still holds up, right? Like, that shit, if you go back to that movie, it still looks really good.
Mm-hmm. Well, they also use practical effects.
Well, there's the thing. Yeah, they knew what they were doing. They blended very well.
Yeah.
But it amazes me that they nailed the ability to blend CGI and practical effects and make very convincing, you know, creatures back then. And then they still struggle to have decent CGI nowadays.
Yeah, it's because the practical effects is was still, like, a necessary component back then for the, you know, close-up things.
Yeah.
Whereas now it's like, that's so expensive. Let's just get
CGI. Which is ridiculous. I know, but you can't. I mean, it's not even Uncanny Valley. It's just straight up they can't get CGI to look that good. Yeah. I mean, like, Ex Machina did a good job, but that's a blend of practical and CGI. That's mm-hmm. a lot of green, you know, cloth on an actress kind of thing, mm-hmm. you know? So, yeah, I would take the ham-fisted 2x4 method of storytelling through light changes over mediocre right. CGI.
So here's to you, James Schumacher.
James, Joel.
Good job, or Joel, whatever.
Your brother, James. James Gunn.
Joel Gunn, James
Joel Schumacher. Joel Gunn. Joel Gunn's a cool name. I'm gonna write a noir story. Joel Gunn walked into the steamy Chicago evening, the plastic sheet in the distance and his coat both billowing. He looked out into the water and he said, "Today's a good day to die." And scene.
So, I promised you, I think that I tell you, do we have time left?
Yeah.
Are we out of time?
Yeah, no, we're good.
Okay, we're good. So, I don't like talking about stuff like this.
Ooh, well then I want to.
on the podcast, I tend to shy away from it.
Well then don't, if it's going to make you uncomfortable.
But this is like a really cool little bit that happened this weekend for me.
Okay.
So, I've been looking around at getting a new car.
What?
I know, this is the first you've heard of this.
That's not the what part. It's the, you haven't had your fucking Beamer for that long.
Right, and I'm not getting rid of it.
Oh, you're just going to get another car.
Yeah.
I want to hit you so hard
right now. I know, and that's why I don't like talking about this.
All right, go on.
So the car that Melinda and I have been kind of like narrowing things down to.
So this is a collective summer car. Okay. A
collective summer car, fun.
You get a convertible?
No, she's not really a big fan of convertibles, and I'm like, whatever. So we got it down to a Subaru BRZ. I don't know if you're familiar with this.
No, I gotta look it up.
They're not a real popular car. It's small. It's a sports car. It's like two seats in the front with like a pretend two seats in the back.
Like no one
would really like ever technically they're seats, but yeah, unless you're like five, you're not gonna want to be back there. And even if you're five,
that's a fun looking car.
Kind of cramped. Yeah. So we've been shopping around for a good used one.
Okay.
And one came up for sale in Buffalo.
They probably don't come up for sale very often.
They don't. There are a few around here. It's also the same thing as a Scion FRS and a Toyota 86. For car nerds out there, this was a model that was jointly made by Toyota and Subaru. So the two of the two companies collaborated. They made this car.
It does look sort of Supra-ish. I mean, I know it's not on that level, but Supra-ish.
Yeah, so a lot of the bits are from Toyota. The engine is from Subaru.
Hmm.
It's not a real powerful car. It's only got about 200 horsepower.
Oh, wow. Really?
Yeah, okay. I know it looks faster than it is, but it's not. It's just a very, very well-balanced...
Fun to drive
with what car. It's got. Okay. And, you know, we test drove one. And it's like if you're doing 60 in it, it feels like you're doing like 80.
Okay.
It's one of these cars, and it's
but that's not because of really bad road noise.
No, it's not. It's not because of it's just you kind of have to try to get the feel of it, but it's just fun.
Sure.
You know?
Yeah.
But you're not gonna like win any drag races with it.
Right.
You know, if you're lined up next to a Mustang at a stoplight, you're just like you just wave go. And let yeah. them go. Yeah.
Rev to encourage them, but then don't actually drag race.
Yeah, but even like taking a curve at even just a reasonable speed is like, woo! I'm going around now. I'm going around the corner. That might sound stupid, but it handles really well.
Yeah, that's an important thing if you're looking for a fun tire.
But it's still, it's just more exciting to drive.
Sure.
So anyway, that's the car that we went out to look at. It happened to be a used one. It was a used from this year, 2017.
Oh, wow.
With like 2,000 miles on it.
Jeez.
So somebody got just was like, the car I want. bought it earlier this year. So anyway, we found it, and this is the important part. This is the fun part. It was at Western New York Lotus.
Okay.
Which is a place that sells...
Lotuses,
as you might imagine.
I did not see that coming.
So I emailed the guy. I sent him an offer. I was like, it was a reasonable offer, but it was like on the low side of reasonable.
Sure.
And he was like, sure, whatever.
And just wants it gone?
Yeah, I was kind of surprised he accepted my offer.
Nice.
But he did.
It's like, I want to sell a Lotus. Get this shit off my lot.
Kind of, yeah. So we went out there, you know, after emailing back and forth and working things out.
Please tell me you test drove a Lotus.
No. No, I didn't.
You have to, like, put a $10,000 down payment on it.
So, yeah. So we go out there. For various technical reasons, we weren't able to purchase it just yet, so we just put a down payment on it.
Okay.
Or a deposit.
Right.
But it's got... some paperwork and stuff still has to be done.
Gotcha.
Before we can actually get it. So... The cool one, once we got through and we went out there, and this guy is out there, and he's an older guy. He's, you know, older than me.
He owns a dealership. Where is the salesman?
There's a Nissan dealership, and then there's this little Lotus spot that's kind of in the middle of the Nissan thing.
Okay.
And it turns out this guy owns the Nissan dealership, and he just sort of does the Lotus thing on the side as almost like a hobby. It's a hobby for him.
Selling Lotuses.
And he has his own Lotus that he races.
Jesus.
And he's been, like, racing forever. And wow. I guess his family built one of the racetracks that's out by, out towards Buffalo.
Oh, okay.
I forget what it's called. Mm-hmm. But if you're driving on 90, you're going to pass it.
Okay.
So, like, this,
he's got racing in his blood.
He's got racing in his blood.
That's cool.
And he's there, and he's got, like, this brace around his knee, and he's having trouble just walking around.
Jeez.
So we feel bad about it. So we go look at the car, and the car looks, it's perfect. There's nothing wrong with this car.
2,000 miles, I hope.
I know. It's literally mint condition. So we come back, and we, like, okay, you put the money down, whatever.
You test drove.
No.
No?
I really don't need to. Didn't need to test drive it.
But have you ever driven a BRZ then?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. So anyway, you get that out of the way, and we're saying thank you and goodbyes, and I know that there's like three or four Lotuses in the front,
mm-hmm.
and there's a couple in like the garage area that we can see.
Okay.
And I can see that it goes back, and I know there are some really cool cars back there. But I look at the guy, and he's like, he's got a sore knee,
right,
like really bad,
uh-huh.
and he's having trouble walking. So I was thinking, like, man, I'd love to go back there and look at that stuff, uh-huh. but I don't want to make him walk around or anything.
Very nice.
So he kind of steps out into the visible garage area, and he starts talking about the stuff that's on the walls. And he's got all around in his garage, he's got all these like racing uniforms,
mm-hmm.
and parts from various cars. There's like a...
This is a camshaft that blew on me in the middle of a race.
No, but they're not his. He's like, these are all the, like, famous Formula One racers.
Oh, wow.
And he's like, yeah, this is like Mario Andretti's jacket and so-and-so's front of their car and somebody's steering wheel. And I mean, these are all names. I can't think of them right, but I've heard of these names.
Sure,
I know
sure,
these
sure.
are these are real legit people.
Sure.
And he's just like talking. I was like, okay, man, this is cool. You ever see the show American Pickers?
Yeah.
It's like that. You know, when they go to see someone,
uh-huh.
and that person just like starts talking about their collection and how proud they are of
right.
everything. It is exactly like that.
Okay.
And then he says, so you want to come back and see the other stuff? And I was like...
1,000 times yes.
I was like, yeah, man, let's do it.
Is Mel just going along with it?
Oh, yeah, because she, I mean, this is all cool stuff.
Right.
And we know there are, like, older Lotus cars mm-hmm. and whatever. We know there's goodies back there. And so he takes us back, and he's, like, limping the whole way. But, the one part is, I feel bad for the guy that he's walking, but he wants to do this.
No, yeah, exactly.
He really wants to.
He wants an audience, he wants to share. Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm like, okay, we're in.
Hobble, old man, hobble. Like the wind.
So he like takes it back and he's like, there's a couple of old Lotus Esprits like from the 80s. I'm just imagining.
Right?
Hmm?
They're
pretty low to the ground.
Ones? Yeah, they're low and wide.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. But they're just, I mean, these are beautiful.
I'm thinking of old Aston Martins. Okay, go
and on. Somehow he's getting like the most mint condition of these cars that
sounds
you can imagine.
He's got money.
Yeah. I people around just, I think, know this guy.
Yeah.
And so he picks up, like, the best specimens out there.
For sale?
Yeah,
Okay.
I mean, I could have bought an 88 Lotus for less than the BRZ.
Nice.
But...
And you're driving a 30-year-old Lotus.
Yeah, I know.
I don't see the maintenance or insurance, either of those things going well for you.
But, I mean, like, and crazy low miles on everything.
Sure.
And he takes us back, and he's got like a Datsun 280Z from like the 70s or 80s, nice. And it's like got 5,000 miles on it.
Damn!
And it's this beautiful. I think it's beautiful. It's like bronze golden color.
Okay.
And other people might look at it and say, that's shit brown. Why would I want that? But it's the original paint, and it's so well preserved.
Was this indoors or was it outside?
This is indoors. Okay. This is all the stuff that he's showing us now is indoors.
Gotcha.
And like an old beautiful MG and more old Lotuses, and it was like being in a museum. It was like That's being cool. a friggin' car museum. It was a real cool experience. The only sad part about it for me is, and each one of these cars had like a story.
Of course.
And he knew it. I mean, he told us like who the owner was and what they did to keep the car mm-hmm. and how few miles it had and all these little tidbits about it. And each one of these cars had its own personality for him. But in almost all of these cases, it was just kind of sad that somebody kept this car for so long and like hardly ever drove it.
Yeah.
And that, out of all this, is like, yeah, it's cool that you've got this car from the 70s that's here with 2,000 miles on it.
When was the last time you took it on the road, old man?
But this person who had it for like 20 or 30 years.
They drove it like one day a year.
I know. That was a little bit depressing for me.
Yeah.
Yeah,
there's a...
Because if you got one of these, man... Why have it if you're not going to enjoy it?
There's a weird mentality with that. Like, I get, like, taking it off the road for 6 months in Western New York.
Yeah, which is what we're going to do.
Right, you're buying a summer car. I mean, so what are you going to do, like, May to October?
Probably early November.
Okay.
So it's like 6 months.
Six and a half.
6 to 7, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I understand that mentality, but yeah, like, the whole, like, cherishing this car and not driving it and making it a museum piece when it's new, much less for 20 years. Like, that... Why
I mean, the end result is great for some person who's coming after you who
wants
to pick up a car in mint condition.
Yeah.
But you're not...
Drive the guy. It's a fancy car. It goes fast. It goes vroom. And handles well. It's a penis on wheels.
It is.
Drive it. Masturbate that fucker.
Man, and those 80s Lotuses, I mean, I can only imagine how much cocaine was still left between the seats.
If you just sort of snort, if you just stick your head in an open window and snort, you will look like Kevin Bacon in Flatliners by the time you stick your head
there you out. Go. You'd be dancing with your jacket in no time.
We are Buddies in Space. You are...
That's Michael Smith. And you are...
And Michael Carassi.
There we go. I was almost Bacon-esque.
Hold on. Wait. Bacon-esque?
Okay. You okay? Whoa.
Buddies in Space is a Stolen Dress Entertainment production. Visit StolenDress.com to check out other Stolen Dress podcasts, blogs, tweets, videos and books.
But your hair is billowing, which
right?
I don't know how you're doing that because you don't really have
room.
Hair.
It's a closed room. It's a closed basement room. How is that possible? Yeah. That's cool though. 80s Lotuses.
Yeah. Beautiful. White and just perfect.
Like a white lotus?
Yes. Like a White Lotus.
We're enjoying Iron Fist, by the way. It's definitely picked up.
Really?
Yeah.
All right. We may have to watch it then.
We're three or four episodes in. It was like a super slow burn,
mm-hmm.
and I respect that, but like I know enough about Iron Fist to be excited for what's coming.
Okay.
And it's like, guys, like, come on, give me something. And they like just like a crumb, like once every episode and a half, and it's like, you're killing me. And then it kind of sped up, and it's like, all right, they've removed a lot of the roadblocks to make this plot move faster.
Mm-hmm.
And now it's like, oh, now I'm really engaged.
Okay.
So, yeah. So you gotta, like a lot of shows nowadays, you gotta give it like three or four episodes.
Mm.
But I think after that point, it's pretty exciting because you've stuck with it. And then you're like, ah, okay, I'm getting rewarded now.
Okay. I'll buy that.
Will you buy a BRZ?